Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing okay, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. We normally never give updates. We usually just get right to the story, but we do have some updates to give tonight, so bear with us. We just got back from LA from our LA meetup, and it was amazing. Special thanks to the Idle Hour. They were super cool and chill, and I love that place, by the way.
Yeah, awesome place. If you're in the area, check out that place. It's great.
I would totally go back.
We also want to thank Natty. She took pictures for us. Loved having her there. And once we get the pictures back, we'll share them. We also want to thank Misconduct Pod,
True Crime Fan Club,
and Murder Road Trip for participating in the meetup. They were there talking with people. And we also had lunch with them, which was quite a bit of fun.
Yeah. Also, thank you to Cleaning of John Doe and Murderish for showing up.
Yeah, it was great meeting everyone. Also, thank you to Zoe and Jennifer.
And if we forgot to thank you, I'm super sorry, but it was madness there. So, you know, we love you.
And for everyone who gave me your business card, thank you. We will be making some changes in the near future. So if for some reason you don't get an episode, then stay tuned because we're not going anywhere. But there will be some changes upcoming. If you have any kind of hiccups with your feed or anything like that, it will be fixed shortly.
Yeah. Also, we're going to be taking part in a lot of cross promotion with other podcasts. We're really trying to grow ourselves and just get our word out there.
Our next meetup will be in St. Paul, Minnesota, and that's on June 16th.
Very cool. And it's not going to be cold.
So check our events page on Facebook. That's really the best place to look. I will probably be posting some news about that meetup soon on all our social media channels.
All right. Enough of that. What are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight is the case of the Lost Girls of Panama. And I'm sure some of you out there have gone on vacation and gone to places that are very scenic. Really, when you talk about scenic, Panama has some amazing views. And if you're taking a camera somewhere, well, this is a good place to go. Essentially, what this case is, it's 2 young tourists from the Netherlands who go to Panama.
They end up going missing, and there's lots of speculation of whether it was an accident or foul play.
We need to take this moment to say we're Americans, and we will do our best to pronounce things, but since we're not from the Netherlands and we have never even been to Panama, pronunciations can be difficult for us, but listen to the story.
Yeah, just bear with us. Chris Kramers, who's 21 years old, and Lizanne Froom, who is 22 years old. Chris is very outgoing. She has been an amateur actress. She's going to graduate school in art history.
Yeah, she was working on her degree in cultural social education, specializing in art education at the University of Utrecht. Now, Chris was blonde, had blue eyes, a very outgoing woman, had two brothers, one older and one younger than herself. Lizanne Froom was 22, and she worked with Chris at a cafe restaurant.
She was 6 foot tall, a volleyball star, very athletic.
And she also loved photography. She graduated with a degree in applied psychology.
So they were planning on going to Panama and volunteer as social workers, learn Spanish, and pretty much do schooling and stuff like that. They got together and they flew down and stayed with a host family to do this social worker program. But when they arrived, the administrators said that they weren't ready for them and it wasn't going to start for another week. So when was this?
This was in early April of 2014.
Now they have nothing to do for a week and they got to kill some time in Panama.
So it's Boquete, Panama, and it's supposed to be a very, very scenic area. A lot of jungle. I think they had plans. When they get there, they've kind of set up some things like out there. If you go hiking, you need a guide, and that's for safety. The guides are trained in, they're usually trained in some CPR. They have first aid kits and they know where to go. They know how to be prepared. The jungle can be very unforgiving. During the day, high heat. During the night, it can get very cold. And so they did the right thing. They contacted a guide, but the day they go missing, though, they set out on their own.
Yeah. Her last journal entry was go with the Pandamanian flow. And they decide to hike up to the Great Divide, which is about a 4-hour hike each way. And they leave sometime in mid-morning, probably going to reach the summit at around 1 to 2 p.m. And it's a beautiful day. It's sunny out that day, which this is considered, what were they called, cloud jungles? And so it's typically raining. They get some ungodly amount of rainfall every year. And it causes flash flooding. It causes mudslides.
Yeah, the trail you're on could just literally disappear.
Yeah, just turn into a river. So it's pretty treacherous. And the trail leads straight up to this Great Divide on the side they're on, closest to Baqueta with their host family. It's probably a 3 or 4, maybe difficulty scale to get up there and get back.
So the Pianista Trail, where they started out from, is the Boquete Hiking Tours Trail. It's covered in a website about the Boquete Hiking Tours that you can go on. In their description, they talk about how there are basically 3 sections that this trail can be broken down into so you understand what it's like. So for the first 45 minutes or so, there are open areas with pastures and gorgeous views of the mountains, and you can actually see into Boquete.
So it's real beautiful and easy walk.
Yeah, and real open. You can see, it feels like you can see everything. After that, you enter the jungle, and there's all this vegetation. There are insects everywhere. There are birds. And you go for about an hour and a half, and you enter into the cloud forest. And they say it's an amazing experience. It's like something in a movie. It feels like you're walking in clouds. And then after another 30 minutes, you're going up into the mountain. When you reach the top, then you're sort of above the clouds. Really, that's why people go there, because you're not going to get that experience hiking in Colorado, even though Colorado is amazing on its own. But this is the cloud forest, and that's the draw.
But if you cross over this great divide, you go into thick jungles with unkept trails, these things called monkey bridges, which are man-made bridges that go over rivers and cross canyons. And they're literally like wires or ropes that you stand on and then you hold on to another wire or rope. Yeah, that doesn't sound dangerous at all.
But if you're just planning to go out for a hike, maybe for a number of hours, maybe you're not really prepared for it. Again, this is where you need a guide. And they had contacted a guide, but that was for the following day.
I think they're just thinking, we're going to take a quick little jaunt up the hill and come on back, because they're wearing light clothing, tennis shoes, and a backpack. It may be a bottle of water.
Yeah, one of the women actually had boots, but they didn't really come prepared food and water-wise. That's already dangerous. But they're probably thinking, we'll just stay on the trail, and then when we're done, we'll just come back.
Yeah. So they don't have anything because it's not planned. So they take off up the trail with their host dog, their host family's dog, whose name's Blue. He's a cute little dog, and he likes to run around and go on nature walks. And they take off. Now, they do have their phones on them. I think it was like an iPhone 4 and a Samsung or something. But kind of tells you what year it is, because, you know, those are older phones. And they have a PowerShot camera on them also. And about $83.
It's probably a good idea, because if you're going on a long hike, we all know how you worry about your phone's battery. And if you have a device like a PowerShot camera with you that's strictly for pictures, well, that will last quite a while. And then you don't have to waste your phone's battery taking pictures. And you'll get better pictures probably anyway.
Yeah, back then the phone cameras were junk. So they take off up this hill, up this mountain, on April 1st. And Blue, the host family's dog, will return that night without Chris or Lizanne.
Well, we know dogs can follow trails. And so this dog probably just went back the way it came. It didn't have any troubles. But people out in a jungle they're not familiar with, or a cloud forest, it's a little bit of a different story.
We're not sure why the women didn't follow the dog back, whether or not they knew they were in trouble when the dog took off, or whether or not they were incapable of following the dog back. And it's possible the dog just took off and they were like, whatever. So April 2nd, the host family has not seen the women, and they were supposed to meet with a guide that day for the hike, and they don't show up. So the guide is kind of worried about them. He's like, well, that's a little odd that they didn't show.
Again, we've already said it. If you're setting out on a hike, you really should have a guide with you. And on April 3rd, the guide heads out and starts searching El Pianista for the women. And what this is based on is they kind of know where they went. So they search the areas out there that they presume they might have ended up.
But they did report to the police that the women were missing on April 2nd. But the initial reaction by law enforcement was, well, these are just a couple kind of tourists that might be partying and drinking. And I won't say that they didn't take it seriously, but they were thinking they might show up. So we're not going to ring the alarm bells just yet.
Yeah, it might have been too early for them. As we said, the guide started searching, and other guides started in the search around Boquete by April 5th. There's actually a map where you can see the spread out of these guys and other people looking for the lost girls, and they're not able to find them.
No, they're hunting around, and there's just no sign of them. They kind of assume that they stuck to, I guess it would be the east side, or the side of the Great Divide that the trail's on. And they're not thinking that they would go over the Great Divide, but they do end up going over there and checking around. But the trails over there are extremely confusing, have multiple like offshoots of, webbed out. There's the monkey bridges. It's even treacherous for the indigenous people who live on that side of the mountain.
And there are rivers that would need to be crossed, and some of them might be a little dangerous depending on the amount of rainfall.
And as we said, day one they set out, it was beautiful weather. After that day, the weather takes a turn. So April 2nd and 3rd, it starts getting a little rainy up there.
They're unsuccessful in their searches. Despite the number of people looking, they have actual guides out there looking. And I think a lot of what's guiding them is their past experience. Where do people typically want to go? That's not working for them. So what's their next step at this point?
Well, April 8th, they start doing aerial searches with helicopters and just trying to see if there's any sign of them, whether it be their clothing or their bodies, whatever it is. You can survive without food for maybe up to 10 days, no problem. But without water, it doesn't take as long. And if you drink from these rivers, from these creeks, there's all kinds of terrible parasites and diseases that are going to give you dysentery and make you even more dehydrated.
And this is why you really need to bring your own water, because you don't know what's going to be in the water you're drinking from the stream.
Their parents will fly in, and they arrive on April 8th also. So the Panama search and rescue teams are in full force, but they're not coming up with much.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So after 10 days of the local searches going on, they call it quits. And the parents of the women, they start their own Dutch team with search dogs. They take a run at it, but they're not coming up with any sign of the women. So they start asking the local tribes and indigenous people for help.
Which I think is a smart move, because there are people that are used to these areas in ways that even a lot of the guides aren't. And it's because typically tourists, as Justin already said, would go up to this divide and get their pictures and then come back. But going beyond that is a lot more treacherous. So enlisting people who are more knowledgeable about those areas is a good call. It's just, you wonder if it's too late.
So it's months later that a woman from one of the local villages turns in a backpack, and it's Lizanne's backpack, and it has their belongings inside of it.
I think they only had brought one backpack with them on the hike, right?
Yeah. So it has both of their cell phones, the camera, two bras, and the $83 equivalent. So this, of course, ramps up the searches again because they've found this backpack. And the lady who found it said that it was wedged in some underbrush or foliage that was, you know, on a river. And she said that she goes past this area multiple times every day and she didn't see it the previous day. So it got washed up and then wedged between two branches. They submitted as evidence. Initially, the law enforcement and the locals, they'd said, hey, we need to check this out. You know, they feel really bad because this is a tourist destination and they want answers. They don't want people to be afraid to come and, you know, visit their city, visit their town and hike on their mountains. It's a big tourist attraction for extreme hikers and mountain climbers. But they come back sort of, I guess you could say prematurely with this was a hiking accident. And people are not too happy with this, I guess, early disregard for any kind of investigation.
Yeah, and I understand where they're coming from. They're trying to appease people's fears because what's the first thing you think when you see pictures of these two young women who have just literally disappeared and then later they find their belongings?
Well, they think abduction. They think kidnapping.
Yeah, all these horrible scenarios go through their minds. And then you have the authorities saying, yeah, this is probably an accident, but where's your proof of that? And this is something we've discussed on the show, I don't know how many times, Justin, where people disappear and then you have persons of interest and you talk about what may have happened. And sometimes all we can do is give our opinions of what we think happened. But if you're an authority who has to give a statement on this, you're going to have to do better than an opinion. You're going to need more evidence.
As it is, the local authorities are not doing anything. They're just taking in the items that have been turned in. That's it.
I think it's because they can't really explore the areas that are beyond this divide. I think there's an intimidating factor there. And this is why the indigenous people from those areas are being enlisted to help. So it's almost like they're saying, well, we're waiting on more evidence, but here's what we think happened. And that's kind of a problem. I know that they had some people going out with the indigenous peoples, but really when it comes down to it, you're at the mercy of their searches. Anything they bring in is maybe one step closer to the truth, but you're waiting on it.
Well, with the discovery of the backpack, the searches resume. And the local guides and search teams are back at it. But it's a lot of the local tribes that are finding things. And they find scattered remains of the two women along with articles of clothing. They actually find one of their jean shorts perfectly folded and zipped on this outcrop that separates two fast moving rivers. This is kind of weird because it's not like the jeans were taken off and just discarded haphazardly. They are laying neatly folded on a rock that's very high up above the waterline. So they were meant to be found.
And also, anytime these items are being turned over, which, I mean, the families have to feel good that items are being found, but they're having to take the word of the people who find them on where they were located because they're not taking pictures. There's no documentation happening here. They're handing stuff over, but it's not been bagged. It's not been handled properly. It's just literally been picked up and then handed over to the authorities, which I guess that's just how it's going to have to be because the authorities never say, well, we'll have representatives with you. And every time you find something, we'll have someone on scene to forensically care about how the evidence is handled, mm-hmm. right? Because yeah. That doesn't happen. So you have people handling evidence. So keep in mind, and because I don't hear this mentioned a lot, but when evidence is acquired and they check for fingerprints and things, there are many fingerprints.
Well, yeah, the backpack has over 30 fingerprints found on it, but they didn't track or take fingerprints from any of the people that were turning in the belongings. So they can't exclude them or anything. Also, there is absolutely zero chain of evidence kept with these items that are brought in. But with the find of the backpack, they have the phones and they have the camera. With the find of the remains, one of the remains they found was a boot from one of the women with her foot still inside. And they were able to do DNA testing on some of these bones and some of these remains that they found and get hits for both of the women. So they know that they have found their remains. And sadly, the families know now that their daughters are deceased. Along with the remains that were brought in, they found remains of three other indigenous people. So all these locals are bringing in bones and things they found out in the jungle. And when they do DNA testing, two of the profiles match the girls, three of them match other people. And they were not found in the same areas or anything. So it's not like all these people were together. In fact, the women's remains were found scattered across a large area. So they probably weren't together either. All of these belongings are found on the other side of the mountain.
What did they learn from studying the phones?
As far as the phones go, they're able to see when the phones were powered on, calls attempted from those phones, and it's very telling what you see.
Yeah, it's kind of haunting because if you get lost, there is a period of survival before you pass away if there is no rescue involved. Looking at the iPhone from Chris Kramer's, they can see that there was a call made to an emergency number, which was 112. Isn't that the Dutch emergency number?
Yeah, that's their equivalent to 911 or emergency services.
And this was on April 1st at 1639, which would have been what, 4:39 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
So that means, I would say, and I think I'm fair in saying this, that on April 1st, at least Chris Kramer's phone was used to try and reach out for help in the afternoon, which means they knew at that time, which was still daylight, that they were in trouble.
Yeah. And then you have another call from the Samsung phone, from Lizanne's phone, at 4:51, just 10 minutes later, again to 112. Then the phones are inactive until the following day, April 2nd, at 6:58 in the morning. Lizanne attempts another emergency services call. And then at 8:14, Chris does an attempt. But you got to realize, they're up in these mountains. I mean, I'm out in the middle of Kansas and I can't get signal. They're in Panama on a mountain. And they could be down in a valley where there absolutely is zero signal. So they are attempting, but they're not getting through.
Yeah, they don't have the benefit of having a satellite phone.
We have multiple calls that are attempted throughout the day, April 2nd.
There are two calls that happen later in the morning and into the afternoon from Lizanne's phone that not only call 112, but also 911, which is America's emergency number.
And Panama's too.
These emergency calls are followed then by simply, and we're getting into April 3rd here, where the phones are turned on just to check and see if there's a signal, essentially, and then turned off. That's to conserve the battery.
Yeah. Yeah. They know that they're going to try to maybe get to higher ground and check for a signal. And so over the next couple of days, you're seeing them just power the phones on and then turn them off.
So let's be clear about this. As of April 1st, that's the very first day, in the afternoon, they realize they're in trouble. By April 3rd, by April 4th, by April 5th, they're checking for signals. This is important because that means they're still in trouble and they're powering off their phone after checking for signal because they need their batteries to last. And they don't know if and when they'll be able to either get back to the trail and get back to where their host family is, or if there will be a rescue, because people are searching for them, even if they don't know it, but they have to assume that maybe there are searches going on.
And remember, this was supposed to be 4 hours-ish up the trail and then 4 hours-ish down. So they would have been home by like five or six-ish. And by 4:39, they're dialing emergency numbers.
That's pretty serious, right? And either they know they're in trouble or something bad happened and they're calling the emergency number because they need to contact somebody. And that was desperation.
Something telling about these calls, especially on Chris's iPhone, is on April 6th, the phone is powered on, but a PIN is not entered, or they do not know the PIN. So I think it's by April 6th, we can make an assumption that Chris is no longer with us, and it's Lizanne who's attempting to use Chris's phone, possibly because her phone is dead.
There are some other possibilities as well. One of those is that someone else is now powering on the phone and trying to use it and realize that they can't get into the phone. But I think that's less likely.
And this is April 6th. The guides started searching for them, or at least the one guide started searching April 3rd. The rest of them jumped in on April 5th. And then there was a full-on search party by April 8th.
So to go over this, between the two phones, and you can find this information online, there's a really handy image that kind of shows you all of the calls and all of the signal checks. In total, between the iPhone and the Samsung, they had 7 attempted emergency calls. 4 of those were to 112 only. 2 of those were to both 112 and 911. And then there was 1 call just to 911. And between the two phones, about 88 signal checks.
They also find photographs on the PowerShot camera. And of course, April 1st, you have regular photos. You have them going up the mountain, taking selfies, taking shots of each other.
Smiling, very happy. And who can blame them? If you look at the pictures, just a tremendous view, an amazing view.
By April 2nd and on, the pictures look much more haphazard. The looks on their face are very solemn. Now, I know a picture doesn't always capture everything, but since we know that they were calling emergency lines the afternoon of the first day, all the rest of the pictures, you can kind of start to see the despair in their face. One of the pictures shows Chris, and she has blood around her temple on the side of her head. And it's very obvious because of her blonde hair. So we know that she's injured at this point. We don't know how bad. Then there's a series of pictures one night. There's some long, faraway shots of rock formations. And then there's closer shots of all these trees and this like little area. And when you look at the photos, you start to realize that they're taking shots like almost like they're trying to do a panoramic, where they take a shot of this tree and then they just take another shot of just a few feet beyond the tree and just, you know, to the right, to the right, to the right. And then another series of shots starting at a lower angle. It's almost as if they're trying to document this area that they're in. And there's a shot of this monkey bridge that's sort of up high. And you can tell it because it's got straight lines, you know, for the wires or the ropes. And then there's another shot that's a little more creepy because it's thought to be a body down in a gorge, but it's so dark and such a, you know, poor quality photograph that you can't tell really what it is. But that's the assumptions out there on, you know, Reddit and the interwebs, is that the shot is of Lizanne taking a shot of her friend's body. There are also pictures of what appears to be arrows that they've set up, and they've used twigs and flowers and stuff. And then there's one of like, looks like tissue or toilet paper. And then there's a mirror set in the middle of it. So hopefully, I guess if somebody from the air was looking, the mirror might reflect and then they could see whatever message they had put out in these photos.
There's one photo with what are they, like twigs or something, and then there are red plastic bag fragments on these twigs, and they found the rest of that bag, or at least a similar bag, in their room.
Yeah, so a tie-in to them, and we assume that these bags are, they're trying to leave like either a bread trail or an arrow telling them where to go. Now, here's where it gets a little complicated. The family members of these two women are not happy with the locals, the law enforcement investigation, the fact that they did not treat this as a criminal investigation, but a hiking accident. They say that there was no chain of custody, and the fingerprints on the backpack show that were never investigated, were never looked into. The guide that they'd met with, he was the first person to meet with them. Now, it was said that they went out and had lunch with some other Dutch men and drank and had lunch with them, but this guide was the first person to see them, and then he went on these searches and was able to find some of their belongings. And he was never really questioned by authorities. So this doesn't look good for the family. They're like, no, like that guy should have been questioned. All of this stuff should have been looked into. This is a mess. So they hire a local lawyer to represent them. And this guy's very tenacious, very outspoken. This attorney says it wasn't investigated properly, and he wants this guide to be looked into. Also, fellow guides on this dude's team. There's another guide. His name's Turnbloom. He talks about this main guide and how he had accusations of harassment against him, and that he had gone against protocol and hung out with female tourists and gone into hot springs with them and stuff like that. And the guides are supposed to be very professional and not drink or fraternize with the tourists. So they take a lot of issues with this guide. They think that he should have been a prime suspect. Meanwhile, with the women's remains, there are some questions there, because the forensic examiner that looked at their remains and verified who they were, he talks about that there's possibility of foul play. And the reason why is because some of the bones appeared to be bleached or too clean. And he publicly speculated that lye or some sort of bleaching agent was used.
Yeah, in other words, something may have been poured on the bones to destroy evidence.
Which the family's lawyer just latches onto this. I mean, the guy said it publicly. He put it out there. But the lead investigators and everybody, prosecutor, they totally go against what the forensics pathologist said and say, oh, it's just an accident. So you have a discrepancy there.
Well, let's talk about this. What are the dangers in Panama, in these jungles, when people go hiking, especially if they don't have a guide?
I mean, you have flash flooding, you have poisonous plants. At night, the temperature would drop down to 50 degrees and they're not wearing jackets. You know, you have hypothermia. I'm sure it was just outright miserable for them. And then you have the rain. So they're getting wet. They're even colder now. You have jaguars. You have other large animals that can attack you. And you have poisonous snakes. You did some reading on that, right, Aaron?
So a lot of the snakes that are out there, they're venomous. That simply means they have fangs that will deliver their poison into your bloodstream or into your flesh. The most notorious one out there that accounts for more than half of the attacks are known as the fertile lances. They're also known as the ultimate pit vipers. They're also known as Serpent X.
Imagine a rattlesnake, but way more angry and pissed off.
They grow up to about 6 feet, but they are known also to be able to reach 8 feet in some circumstances. really the danger with these snakes is you're wandering around, and if you accidentally step near or on one of them, they will attack you. It's a defense mechanism.
What does their venom do to flesh?
Well, if you don't get treatment, and treatment is within about 4 hours, you can have internal and external bleeding, and your flesh can actually die. And a lot of these times, if people aren't treated soon enough, they will have to have limbs amputated.
And if you're not getting treatment and your limb or whatever is it has been bitten, it's going to get infected and you're going to die within a day or two. So they're extremely fatal if you don't get treatment right away. But with the women, we have all of these issues. The family's lawyer, he says that, well, the other side of the mountain is so treacherous, is so steep that there's no way the women would have gone over there on their own accord. He talks about the flash flooding, the monkey bridges, and these 60-foot drops. And he says, well, they're not going to go over there. Nobody in their right mind would go over there. So the prosecution's hypothesis just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there are a lot of things we could start to assume happened here. Yeah, why would someone wander over there because no one ever goes there? Well, remember, they were already calling the emergency numbers that they knew of the first day. So let's really discuss what was possible here. We were just talking about venomous snakes, but this Bothrops asper or fertile lance or serpent X, what have you, is just one danger. Someone could have stepped near a snake and got bitten. They could have also slipped off a cliff. And you might say, well, why would they do that? Well, we have people who have accidents all the time in national parks, in forests. It happens. And if you add in the fact that they could be getting dehydrated because they weren't prepared for an extended hike, then what happens when you become dehydrated? I mean, you become delirious. Your ability to make good choices, that starts to go out the window because now you're on unsteady feet. You're just not clear-headed anymore.
You become disoriented and aggressive even when you're up on the mountain. There was a story of 8 guides that were training on the other side of the mountain, kind of where the women's remains were found. And they were all experienced hikers, very professional guys, but they didn't know the lay of the land. They didn't know the area. So this was perfect for them to train in. These 8 guys got lost. And in the middle of it, they got into a heated debate. The group split up. So 4 guys went one way and 4 went the other because they would not agree on how to get out of this jungle. And it took the other guides, the locals, to find them, find both groups and bring them back.
Getting lost could mean death. So you could see why, you know, you add in dehydration, you add in anger and fear. I could see that becoming a pretty violent debate because their very lives depended on making the right choice.
Again, there's this idea out there that there are drug cartels, there are cannibalist pygmy tribes, and just all this kind of crazy stuff that could have killed them. And also you have the idea that the guide was possibly a sexual predator, as they infer, and took them out or met them out there and abducted them, raped them, killed them, dumped their bodies. And then you have this question of the bones being bleached as if to keep a trophy or to cover up a crime.
Really what we have here, because the remains don't tell enough of the story, is we have a lot of room for theories and conjecture.
Exactly. And the family's lawyer is rah-rah in one side, who's picking apart the investigation, or pretty much the complete lack of investigation. And he's fanning the flames of the family, saying, there's something wrong here. And meanwhile, you have the Panama locals and law enforcement saying, dude, this was an accident. Even the Dutch search teams that the family brought down concluded that this most likely was an accident and there was no foul play. Now, how can you say no foul play if the bones were bleached, right?
Yeah, the question is, Were the bones bleached through natural processes, or was this a deliberate act to confuse the investigation or to erase traces of a crime?
Well, in a jungle or any, when you go out in the elements, just having a body laying in the shade compared to laying in direct sunlight changes the decomposition time and changes how things decompose. Also, they never found their heads or their arms. And the lawyer's like, well, what animals out there are going to eat a skull? Well, if a body is in water, the head and limbs are the first things to detach. So if they'd fallen in a river, then that's the first thing to go. Back to the bones, though, I don't know. I mean, the forensic pathologist, he came back and said, it's sort of undetermined because we don't have enough of their remains to figure out what happened here. And other pathologists and other experts have looked at the bones and said, you probably could have got the same result just leaving it out in the sun and having animals and other elements. And they were calling them like micro ecosystems within the jungle that have different elements to them, different animals, different, humidity factors, all these things that can really accelerate decay. So they explain the condition of the bones with exposure to the natural elements.
So really it's what you'd expect to see, but with very little remains to go off of and none of these remains showing any evidence of a knife or an axe or what have you, it really looks like these are just the remains of people that died out in the jungle.
Well, and the foot that was found inside the boot, the bones had fractures in them. I think that is telling. That sounds like a fall to me. You fall off a cliff, you fall off a monkey bridge, you land on your feet, you break your foot. Now you can't move as fast. Now you're disabled.
And that's the thing is, in a jungle, you're not really expecting to find a whole skeleton out there because it's exposed to nature. It's exposed to animal predation. So, of course, these things will get scattered about because of water, because of the animals. The best they can do is say, well, we found this woman's rib over here, another woman's rib over here. We found a pelvic bone over here, and we found their articles over here, their clothing. It's just, now it's a mess. You don't have the investigators at these sites where these things are being found. You're just having the locals basically bring them in and say, yeah, we found it kind of over here. And they can kind of point on a map.
Now, going back to the family's lawyer who says they wouldn't have gone down the other side of the hill because it's so treacherous. You have falling rocks, you have mudslides, you have poisonous snakes, you have fast-moving rivers. Well, that sounds really dangerous. And I think he's actually answering his own question. He's describing how dangerous it is on the other side and that nobody would go there. But that's where they were found. Also, in all these photographs, there's no third party. There's no one around. And then they're using their cell phones and calling 911 over and over and over again. If somebody had kidnapped them, do you think they would take their phones away from them?
Yeah, it just doesn't really ring true. Our minds immediately go to foul play when people go missing. But then again, in a jungle where you have tourists and they're not used to the area, there's just so much danger here and so much that can go wrong for these two women that with foul play, I feel like we need more evidence of that.
Well, and then they cite the 30 fingerprints on the backpack that contains their phones, their camera, and their money. That's all there. So the theory is, oh, well, the indigenous people kidnapped the women, murdered them, and then decided to bleach their bones in the middle of the jungle and not take them back to wherever. And then to get the local officials off their backs, they turn over all this evidence unscathed. I mean, who wouldn't take the money? Who wouldn't take the electronics?
Well, they're saying that these people wouldn't want that stuff anyway. And that if they wanted to keep some stuff, they could have because, well, they didn't find a lot of the women's remains. So they could have easily kept some stuff for themselves the authorities weren't really looking into these people that were bringing it in. So now, of course, the theories run wild.
And I get that the investigation wasn't proper. I understand that the discrepancies between the pathologist and the DA, the prosecutor, are totally at odds. But are they? I think the prosecutor's like, I'm not going to check this out or investigate because we have nothing.
They're at the mercy of what evidence is being brought to them. And I think that's what's hard for a lot of people to get with, is that the authorities are relying on these other people, and it's like they're disconnected from their own investigation. It feels really unsatisfying and feels like they'll never get an answer because they're not trying hard enough.
Well, and I hate to keep harping on them, but I feel like the lawyer they hired, he just wants to keep fanning the flames and collecting a paycheck from the parents, because he's not going to get paid if they give up and just say, okay, this was a terrible tragedy and an accident. I hate to put it that way. I mean, I think he's trying to fight for him, but I don't know what evidence there is that shows a third party was involved here when you have no photographic evidence. You have them using their phones. Who would not take the phones away? And you could say, well, you know, they were secretly using their phones, but they had money on them. They had their phones. They had this camera. No, and not in any picture. No pictures. Was there another person that they took a picture of? Nothing stolen. There is no evidence that really points to foul play. Now, if somebody were to say, well, what evidence do you have that it's an accident? I just look at this as you have two people that are completely unprepared, not packed, not ready for a jungle hike, and they go missing. I think the default answer is they had an accident and died. And I don't know if it's trying to prove a negative, but I'm just thinking, what evidence do you need that an accident happened? I mean, you have two people that are just sorely overwhelmed by their environment.
Well, the proof we have that there was an accident is the foot in the boot. And it's not hard to imagine that condition of that foot in the boot tells the story of what happened. Let's talk about these pictures they took, because there are a large number of pictures that were taken basically in darkness.
Well, I think that the one series of photographs of the area, and then it's speculated that one of them is Chris's body. Well, I'm looking at these and thinking, well, there's a picture of the bridge, and then there's a picture of this area that's very thorough. Maybe that's where Chris fell. And that's what the photos are trying to tell us, is find this place and you can find us. They're trying to document where their demise started happening.
The other question is, if there are a lot of photos being taken in the darkness, then what's the purpose of that? Some people are speculating that one of the women was using the flash to try and find her way. But there's also the danger of, if you take a picture with a flash in total darkness, which that's possible out there at times, that you would just end up blinding yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Your night vision goes. But none of the night pictures were of each other, really. They were of trees. They were of rock formations. So they're taking pictures of their surroundings. Now, they could be trying to signal somebody with their flash. So if they had a bad guy with them that's abducting them or chasing them, why would they be taking pictures with the flash in the middle of the night? Because that would give away their location. Also, if they were under guard, who in their right mind would let their captives take pictures? It just doesn't make sense to me, the whole foul play angle.
Another possibility, and this one's sort of terrifying, is what if the pictures were being taken, the flash was being used to scare off predators?
Possibly, yeah, because that's their only thing that they have. They don't have any weapons on them. They don't have anything to make loud noises with besides their own voices. So,
and that's really a question I have, is I don't know that you would know a snake was coming at you out there. And I don't know either that you would know a jaguar was hunting you. while it's a terrifying idea that they were having to use their flash to startle animals to scare them away, I just personally can't believe that they were trying to scare jaguars away.
I look at 8 seasoned professionals got lost out there. When they turned in the bones, there were bones from local indigenous people who had met their fates out there. With all of, I mean, we have people that go missing here all the time. I mean, if you ever see the TV show, I Shouldn't Be Alive, somebody breaks down on the side of the road in the middle of the desert. And 3 days later, they're dehydrated and dying, and somebody happens to come across them. Or if you remember our case about Alfred Wright, they were searching the area where he had died and literally like walked by his body and didn't find him. This search, they didn't know where to look. They had an idea, but this is a mountain. So if they're not on a trail, where do you go from there?
Yeah, I had interviewed Alan Atadero about his son, Jared, who had gone missing in the Colorado mountains. And it's just so easy to lose someone. It sounds crazy. You think, oh, well, we'll just take a helicopter up and fly overhead and then we'll see a blue or red jacket, whatever, and we'll find them. It's not that easy. It's just like the ocean. And the ocean doesn't even have foliage to cover anyone. And they still can't find people sometimes when they go into the ocean. It's just because it's such a large area, you can only see so much with your eye. So it's not like you imagine. And you just brought up the Alfred Wright case. They had an idea where his body probably was. And they searched that area, I think, 3 times before they found his remains. So it's, trust us, it's easy to get lost, especially in such a large jungle area.
The one criticism about this case that I will definitely agree with was they reported the women missing the next day. And it wasn't until the 8th that law enforcement and the local parties did a full-fledged official search. Up until the 8th, it was just the local guides looking for them. So if they were a little bit more on the ball, a little bit more reactionary, possibly they could have found the women. Possibly they might have caught a signal from them, because we know that they were alive up until at least the 6th, maybe past the 6th.
Let's talk about that. When we look at just the phone evidence, because really the remains can't tell us anything in terms of when they might have died, but the Samsung and the iPhone, the Samsung is not used after April 5th, and the iPhone is last used on April 11th. So I would say April 11th is the final day either of the women was alive. And we could probably assume that Chris Kramer's died around April 5th, if not before, just after. And then Lizanne Frohn probably died around April 11th.
And again, they didn't find their backpack or their remains until months later. So who knows if this search party had gone out even the next day, if they would have been able to find them, because they weren't able to find their bodies. Now, if they're yelling and flashing their cameras, that gives a little bit more of a chance. And I guess that comes back to if they had more water on them, if they had been more prepared for this hike. And I think that, again, they just weren't really planning on a long hike. They might have been able to survive longer, which would have given them more opportunities to be found.
There is another mystery with this case, which is whenever you take a picture, it can be time stamped or numbered. And in these series of pictures, there's a missing picture. It's among the last of the photos that were taken during the daytime. The last ones are 507, 508, and 510. Number 510 was taken on April 8th at 1:30 in the morning. But 509 is gone. It had been deleted. So we don't know if it was deleted accidentally or on purpose to cover up something.
My hypothesis is more or less that they got to the top of the mountain. They thought it looked cool on the other side. And they continued down the trail. And they came across a monkey bridge or a cliff. And that's when Chris took a fall, and Lizanne might have stayed with her for as long as she could, tried to document where they were, but then ended up taking off on her own. And whether it be she suffered a fall or an accident or literally just died from exposure, this is how I see this going down. Because there's no evidence of a third party, all we have is sort of a botched investigation, but that doesn't show foul play. It just shows that they didn't take it as seriously and mishandled it somewhat.
Yeah, there was a woman who was murdered. She was an American. She was murdered in Panama while she was hiking on a path to a place known as Red Frog Beach. And there were a lot of similarities, people believe, between the cases. And so that's one of the tie-ins to this being foul play, is because we don't have their remains, or at least enough of their remains, to make a real determination on cause of death, that you can't rule out foul play. And I get that. Someone could have easily murdered these women, and then because of the elements and because their bones and the remains were exposed to air and water, that it really just erases any evidence of a crime. So I think really when we talk about this murder that happened, and it was a known murder, as well as unsolved murders or disappearances that have happened in the area, that we can't say for certain that this was an accident. And we have to keep in mind there could have been foul play here. But I really think that the foot having shown signs of fracture within the boot, that it does indicate that there was an injury. Now, sure, some people could say, well, maybe she was being chased and that's how she ended up going over the cliff. Fair point. Also, I think what else that's really sticks with me in this case is because the phones were being used and turned on to check for a signal, that's more indicative of someone who's trying to reach out for help. And so that also really backs up my belief that this was as the result of just an accident and then exposure, dehydration, just not being prepared to go on this hike the way it went down. Maybe, just maybe, some of us really don't like the idea of these two women meeting their end as a result of foul play. As sad as it is, we would much prefer for them to have just died because they weren't prepared to be out in that jungle on that day.
The idea that they were murdered and now there's a whole police cover-up is, the idea is, well, we don't want to scare away tourists from coming here if they're afraid of getting murdered. But hey, it's a dangerous, treacherous place. You can die there without being murdered. So I think that idea is sort of out the window.
But there are risks in everything. And I have no doubt that there are people that will continue to travel to Panama to hike those trails and get great pictures because, well, they'll be ready, right, Justin?
I would hope. I mean, again, it's one of those things where bring extra stuff, even if you don't think you're going to be out very long.
That's one thing that when I was talking to Alan Atadero about his son, Jared, is the lesson is be prepared. And those who have suffered great losses are out there trying to get that message to you. I would say the best thing we can do in memory of Lizanne Frone and Chris Kramers is to be prepared. Be more than prepared. Get a guide. Bring plenty of water and food. Enjoy these hiking trails that you'll find in Panama. But just don't go out thinking that you're just going to be gone for a few hours and then you'll come back, because that might not happen.
So we have the Panama investigators saying it's a accident. We have the Dutch investigators saying it was an accident. And they even brought in a wildlife survivalist named Carl Wiel, who analyzed the case, and they brought in photographic forensic experts, all these different people. And even Carl is saying there's no evidence of foul play here. It is more than likely an accident.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince.
Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.